Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. As you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, we rarely have a guest at the very beginning unless they're show business royalty. Daryl Hammond qualifies easily. Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Really?
Really?
Absolutely.
We really want to know.
I want to know if you remember us. We were on at the Loop radio station, and you were booked on the Danny Bonaducci show, and yeah. We poached you.
We totally stole you. This was 25 years ago.
Was it 25?
It was quite a while ago.
1996, was it?
Yep.
Maybe even before that.
Maybe a little earlier, yeah. I'll tell you, I'll use it a reference so you'll know how early it was. You, of course, you were on Saturday Night Live, but they would not let you do Jesse Jackson.
Yeah.
In the very beginning, they thought it would be too upsetting
for you to do. Oh, yeah, that's when they had people show up, lawyers show up with like an artist's palette, and there was 7 shades of makeup, and
yeah.
They tried on the 7 shades to see which one would be offensive.
To see which one would be.
Wait, you know, that's offensive. No, but in a white guy wears that, that's offensive.
But did you do that as part of your audition for the SNL, didn't you?
I did, but I also did him on air, I think, 4 times. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Twice with Keenan, and then I believe two Weekend Updates.
Wow. Wow.
But yes, that was a fair amount of time ago.
And you also used to call us. We worked overnights, correct?
Yeah, late
at the
night.
Time.
Yeah.
And you used to call us on Thursday nights and just check in when you were doing your dress rehearsals. Any of this ringing a bell?
Yes.
And then you would just put people on the...
You'd say, here's Jim Brewer.
Here's
we talked to Jim Brewer. Here's Chris Kattan. Yes. And we talked to Chris Kattan.
We miss you.
That's before it all went bad. Before the world went to hell. Well, you could have a collegial atmosphere among performers.
Now, you have brought a guest and co-worker, I guess, with you.
She's, you do it.
It's Kendall Ketchum.
Hi.
A stand-up comic.
Kendall.
Hi. I've been opening for Daryl for about 3 years now. Something like 3 years.
Yeah. Do you hand-pick your opening act? Is that how it goes? I don't know. I never did stand-up.
I hand-picked her. I always found out that if a woman opened for me, it was a better show.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, for a long time, I thought I had the answer to it. But I don't really know.
Any woman at all?
Well,
hopefully a stand-up.
Funny one.
Somebody funny.
Here's Dr.
Jokes.
Janet Feingold, ladies and gentlemen. Yay!
So I saw Kendall at Caroline's, and she was funny. Real funny. And also... really good with the crowd.
Yeah.
So I proposed her and you said yes right away. And
yeah, there was zero hesitation on my part.
Sure.
When that phone call came in.
Yeah, I bet.
Have we done any hell gigs together?
Yeah.
Any what?
Hell gigs.
Those are nights that just nothing goes right.
Now, you're a former stand-up, so you would know that. I had no idea.
I'll put it this way. I did a speech in Altoona, Pennsylvania last year.
Yeah.
And I was living in L.A. at the time. It took me total travel time to get to this $7,000 job from Los Angeles, 31 hours.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's Altoona. You can't get there.
Right.
Right? So I'm flying, let's see, 5 hours, 6 hours across the coast. Then I'm driving down to Altoona. That's another 7 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. And then by the time you get there, being funny is like the last thing in your mind, right?
Yeah. And then, and I thought, 30 hours of travel for $7,000. I've done better than this in my career.
But from where I'm sitting, I'm like, $7,000.
Right.
Absolutely.
No, but I mean, I was doing a speech at the Penn State had an I don't know, what do you call
graduation?
It? Annex, subdivision. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They had a part of their campus, and of all places, Altoona.
Hmm.
And what did you talk about?
I talked about this book about child abuse. I wrote a book, God, If You're Not Up There.
Yeah. Really?
Yes, it's a New York Times bestseller. And it's out on Audible Books right now. It's Amazon Editor's number one pick this week.
You've been very candid about it. Your childhood was very rough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote a play about it.
Yeah.
I wrote a book about it. There's a documentary coming out next week.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Is it next week or 2 weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks.
In New York City about
it. That's great.
Where do we see it if we aren't in New York City?
I just got like a whole bunch of literature on it. Well, I'll get it to you.
All right,
that's
cool.
Fine. That's fine.
Yeah, they added another showing. It was made by Geraldine Dreyfuss, the Oscar-winning documentary maker.
Yeah.
5 years they followed me around.
Wow. Do you think comedy became an escape for you, having such a rough childhood? Did you turn to comedy to make things make sense in your life?
Part of the reason I did it was because it made my mother laugh. And, when she came in the room and she sort of had that look in her eye when she was going to pick up the ball peen hammer,
yeah,
you could, divert her a little bit. She was pretty good at doing voices anyway.
Yeah.
But if you could get her talk, I learned early to entertain, be funny. All the time.
Yeah.
Be funny. Here they come. Here she comes again. Do Popeye. Here she comes.
Are there regrets in that, Daryl, that you were funny all the time?
When I saw this documentary, I guess it's getting some good play. It was at the Michael Moore Film Festival and got a lot of attention out there. And the book is actually a good book, I have to say. But not that I'm a great writer. It's just there's some weird stories in there. I saw the film and I got a little bitter.
Did you? Why bitter?
I was like, oh, man, that was a crappy upbringing. Because in the movie, we go back into the house where all of these things happen.
Yeah.
Was that your first time back?
Yeah. It was hard enough even to find it, It's like these row of small, lower class, we were lower class income, low income people, where all the homes look almost the same. And of course, they've been painted on and added to over the years, and the yard's not there anymore. And, but the hibiscus bush, which is the centerpiece of the whole book, was there.
Yeah.
See, I wanted to call the book Hibiscus Bush, but they love that God. If not up there, I'm blank.
Blanked.
Yeah. I love hibiscus. I have a hibiscus tattoo. I just think it's the most beautiful flower ever.
Yeah.
Do you think, now you've been around some of the funniest people of our generation, both through stand-up and Saturday Night Live, would you say that that's the story more times than not, that people that go into comedy are doing it as some sort of an escape or not?
I would present that to Kendall, because I always say just because you're effed up doesn't mean you're fun, doesn't make you funny.
Right.
And yet a lot of funny people have had some demons.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that making sense?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
I feel like it's that's your coping mechanism. I mean, it's not that I feel that. That's proven.
Well, when you're 7 years old and you do a decent Popeye, you're totally going to get the girl's going to skate with you. You go to the skating rink every weekend. And these little girls out there, and you start doing Popeye and
the world's yours.
I didn't know Popeye was a skater.
Oh, yeah. Big skater.
But making people laugh, they're like, they wanted you around.
Sure. Yeah. You're everybody's friend. Mm-hmm. Daryl Hammond is here. Kendall Ketchum is here. They're performing at Zany's. Zany's in Rosemont Saturday night. Go to zanys.com. All your ticket information is there. We'll take a little break and then continue in just a minute.
We'll be right back.
We're talking about Kendall Ketchum.
All right. Coming up next. Daryl Hammond's here. He's performing at Zany's in Rosemont tonight, tomorrow night. Go to zanys.com for all your ticket information. He's on Twitter, at Daryl C. Hammond. He's brought Kendall Ketchum with him. She is the opening act. When did you realize, besides Popeye, that you could make a living at this? That you weren't just good at voices, Daryl, but you could make a living doing it?
I didn't know that I could. I knew that I waited tables from the age of 21 to 29. And I quit one day. And I said to myself, I'm living at my parents' house or in one of their cars. They had a Plymouth, a blue Plymouth.
Yeah.
Chrysler Plymouth. And I was like, I'm going to live in that car. I am not ever going to wait another table. I'm never going to let anyone talk to me like that again.
Yeah.
Because, some people are cut out for it.
Imagine now in today's environment what it's like to be a server. That's what I couldn't take.
Yeah, I mean, some people would if they say to you, "Is the pastrami lean? Because you're not lean, I want it." You're like, no, but it's a fatty food.
Don't you want your pastrami fatty?
No, I want it lean. Or is this pastrami hot? Because you're not hot, I want it. Now, some people are fine with that, but 8 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And so I quit. And
are you a good tipper now because of that past experience?
Kendall knows I'm disgusting.
He is one of the most impressive tippers I have ever
come
across. Because it is a hard life.
Yeah. I mean, we could be somewhere for 2 seconds, and
I mean, it is hard.
He tipped very well.
Did you wait tables?
No.
Oh, my
Thank
goodness.
God.
Man, that was
not easy. Not easy. Which are the
so anyway? I made up my. Sorry,
that's right.
That's when I changed my major to business administration. This is when the story gets interesting. Sorry.
Which of the impressions are you most proud of? Is there one or two that you just go, I know I do a lot of them and they're good, but this one or these two?
Oh, I would have to say Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
But
yeah.
I mean,
that you do.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of other ones that I used to do that you know I never did on the air. Like I, at the time, I thought I did a good Tiny Tim. I thought I did a good, you know, Wolfman Jack.
Oh, really?
You know, there's lots of.
Let me hear some Tiny Tim and Wolfman. Come on,
I can't do either one of them now. Not, I started smoking again.
Wolfman Jack smoked, I bet.
Yeah, he did.
I don't know. It's been a long time. That was like three drugs ago.
For some reason,
I was like doing the Special K. Yeah.
As soon as I would see the set, you guys would come out of commercial, and I would see that it's the Regis and Kelly set.
Yes,
I would start laughing immediately. That was just such a perfect impression, the Regis Philbin.
Yeah, and it was weird because you know Dana Carvey gave me. Well, I have a great history and a good friendship with him. He did it so well.
Yeah.
But I found this one nasality thing, and then the whole say things twice. You know, Regis says things twice. The second time, it makes him mad. You know, Joey and I were in a cave down in Tijuana that was 1,000 years old. It was 1,000 years old! Yeah. I remember there's an oldie but a goodie.
Oh, that's a good one. And then Chris Matthews. Boy, sometimes if I wasn't looking, I thought it was Chris Matthews. It was so,
so
perfect.
Good.
What are you doing? Stupid. Dumb. He called me. This was a year ago he was still calling me.
Really?
What are you doing? I have an upset stomach. Pepsi AC. Frown upside down.
I got to be honest with you. I had no idea who Chris Matthews was
really?
When you first started doing it. And then I looked it up and you were better than Chris Matthews.
So at some point you've done the impression for the person. They have seen you do it. What's that like when they're right there in front of you? Not always good?
I think after my first show at SNL, I went out there as Ted Koppel, and it was a solid impression. But I was so frozen with utter terror that the piece bombed, and what... That taught me was if you ever let yourself get that scared again, you should shoot yourself.
Wow.
Or retire.
Yeah.
You can control that. Take it easy.
Yeah.
Right? Because I let myself get terrified, and I went out, I did a decent Ted Koppel, but, you know, the guy wasn't funny. You know, I mean, like, you know what? When Lauren hired me, he's like, I know you can duplicate people, but can you be funny?
Yeah.
You know, you have to italicize it a little bit and be funny. You can't just, like, do the impression, you
right.
know? So after that, very little, at least in performance life, very little rattled me after that.
Good.
I bombed and I knew the price of getting that scared. So it's either retire.
Yeah.
Or get a hold on yourself. Okay, pal?
Sure.
You know, yeah. That was hard.
Valuable yeah. lesson, though.
Ted Koppel. Ted Koppel, so ABC News. Yeah.
And I know this one goes back a little bit, too, but the Phil Donahue made me cry.
Because they're the same voice.
Is it? Yeah.
Except Phil's on the front like, you're a blue collar guy. You're married 20 years to the same gal. How many times can you eat lasagna? I mean, come on. But then you just move it to the back of the throat and it's Dean Campbell. Shake your love. You just can't shake your love. Sorry. I over-caffeinated, obviously.
No, every time I see Bill Clinton, I think of you.
Really?
Yeah. Every time. Just the thumb up. It was just...
He never did that.
No, but you did.
He did it one time. And then one time I was at the Cellar and I did it... Like, I bit the lip and did the thumb at the same time. And then we did it on SNL. And then that was how everyone did Bill Clinton. But
yeah.
Remember when Dana was doing George Sr., that's became how you did them, like Nakanda,
right?
Nakanda, because it was so wildly fabulous.
But Daryl, look at the evolution on SNL of how they portrayed the presidents. When Chevy Chase did Gerald Ford, he didn't look like him, he didn't sound like him, he didn't act like him, and people accepted it somehow.
And Gerald Ford didn't fall that much either.
He fell once.
One time,
yeah.
I can't explain that.
Did you watch a show called The Copycats when you were young?
I did.
What did you think? For people who
What's
don't know,
that?
It was a syndicated show where they had all the best impressionists of the time. It was Rich Little, Frank Gorshin, Joe Baker, George Kirby, Marilyn Michaels. Who am I leaving out?
Fred Travellina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they would do scenes as, you know, different characters. But what kind of an impact did that show have on you? Any at all?
No. At the time, I wasn't considering, you know, trying to make a living. At the time, I was still trying to become a Major League Baseball player.
Really?
That's what I wanted to do.
What position are you best at?
Not any of them, really.
Well, then that's going to be hard to be a professional baseball player.
I mean, I was good at high school left fielder, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So that show didn't make you say, boy, that would be fun to do that.
No, I didn't do that until I quit waiting tables and knew I could be okay being poor.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be fine. I will be poor. I won't have checks. I won't have money. I won't have nothing. But I'm not going to let people talk to me like that again.
Yeah.
You know? And once I put myself in that space, and I got this book by Williams Deming about how they rebuilt Edwards Deming, how they rebuilt Nagasaki after the war, small incremental changes and improvement. And I said, I'm going to get so damn good, people are going to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
And I started that at the age of 27.
Wow.
Yeah.
Documentary, keep us posted on that. Is it the same name as the book?
The documentary is called Cracked Up.
Okay.
Can't wait to see it.
I hear it's a goodie.
Good, 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 good.
Will you be announcing yourself at the Zanies shows tonight?
No, I won't. How do you like them apples, lady?
Daryl Hammond.
It's not that easy to make you laugh.
Yes, it is.
It isn't.
I'm easy.
You don't give it up that easy.
We're big fans of yours and have been. We've asked to have you come in every time you've been through Chicago. It is awesome to see you.
It's awesome to see you.
Please come back.
You're the best.
Hola, namaste, y'all.
Daryl Hammond and
Kendall, great to meet you.
Great to meet y'all. They're performing. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Zanies.
Kendall is funnier than me and better looking.
Oh, how about that? The 1-2 punch.
You can see she's got it all, folks.
Go see him at Zanies, everybody. Friday and Saturday night. Zanies.com has your ticket information. Thanks again, guys. Greatly appreciate it. Some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Just really quickly before we continue with the show, another heartfelt thank you to Daryl Hammond, who just is a master at doing impressions. Just so, it's so impressive to watch him effortlessly go from one to another to another. I'm amazed.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
And he did a great Trump.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Big time.
We were instructed to maybe not bring up the Donald Trump situation. For people who don't know, over at Saturday Night Live, Daryl Hammond for years did a dead-on impression of Donald Trump. This is pre-President Trump, of course. This is when he was just a very
apprentice.
Rich man and the host of The Apprentice. And then they decided to recast the role, and it went to a couple different guys. Taron Killam did it for a while.
Oh, I forgot about that.
But then they decided when Donald Trump was, you know, obviously a front runner on the Republican side and going to be a major news story, to kind of stunt cast it a little bit and go with Alec Baldwin, because that's, you know, big name power to have as part of the show every week. And that, of course, didn't sit well with Daryl at all, because he was doing an incredible impression and thought he would just automatically be given the job if it wasn't going to remain Taron Killam's to have. And so that's a very sore spot. And I get that. I understand that. I'm sure that's
Fortune magazine has an article about it. Donald Trump wants Daryl Hammond to portray him again, so that's probably why that won't happen.
I wonder why. What would be in it for him?
Because if you think back, when Daryl was doing Donald Trump, there wasn't as much animosity because there wasn't as much at stake. Now Alec Baldwin is taking hit after hit after hit, and I believe Donald Trump would think Daryl would be nicer to him.
Well, his impression of Donald Trump wasn't as mean-spirited.
But it was a different time, too.
It was a very different time. Everything wasn't... He wasn't in the office. He was hosting The Apprentice. So, but I mean, he did it. The first time I saw him do the Donald Trump impression was just when Donald Trump was just a very rich, you know, financial guy, magnate, and he nailed it right out of the box. So you can understand his being upset that they wouldn't have enough confidence in him to play it every week. But I understand SNL's point of view, too. Wow, we get more attention if we bring in Alec Baldwin.
A big name.
So that's how it played out.
The Fortune magazine, you can just Google it, Daryl Hammond and Fortune. And he had some issues, some problems that he went through, was devastated when he lost that role.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, he's still the announcer.
I'm not sure. I know he has been recently, but like this week, he's here, so he can't be in New York to announce it. So
yeah, because somebody wanted to know who's going to announce SNL tomorrow if Daryl is here at Zany's. And then someone wants to know, do Bill and Wendy share one Quip toothbrush?
Yeah, we do. They only sent us one.
I get it Monday, Wednesday, Fridays.
Right.
You get it Tuesday, Thursday, and the weekend.
I must have the weekends. That's when I brush. So yes, thank you, inquisitive listener. We appreciate that. Okay, last night was the night. We've talked about this already on the show. Every year for the past 8 years, Jimmy Kimmel, after Halloween, does a bit where parents have to explain to their children on Halloween, after the kids have gone out and, you know, looked forward to Halloween for a year and have put their costumes on and gone door to door and collected a bag or a pumpkin full of candy. The children then go to sleep, and Jimmy Kimmel has instructed parents to make a video of them explaining to their kids, parents explaining to the children that during the night, mommy and daddy were hungry, and they ate all of your Halloween candy. So, like I said, this has been going on for 8 years now. The first time, I didn't see it the first year. I saw it the second year. People told me about it the first year, and I didn't see it. But starting with the second year, I started watching it. It is, without a doubt, the cruelest thing you could ever watch.
But
boy, is it funny.
I don't find it funny. It hurts. It honestly hurts my heart.
It really, truly does. It does. And I have tried my best to analyze. I want so badly to understand why something so cruel can be so funny to some of us. Because there are other people.
You're a prankster. That's why. You like pranks. Admit it. I hate pranks.
I do. But when you think about what's on the line here, this is the trust of your children. Like, as I watched it last night, and I brought in some audio, we'll play some audio for you in just a little bit. I realized something that's awful about myself, which is I could do that to somebody else's children, but I could never do it to my own.
See, I'm nicer to other people's children than I am my own.
So you could do it to your own children, but not to somebody else's kids? But as I'm watching it, I thought, you run the risk of your children never trusting you
again by doing this. It's not left unopened that long. I mean, don't they fess up pretty quickly?
They never show them fessing up.
Do it with his kid?
No, I've never seen that happen. but then I fall into that bracket. Because I was thinking that I'm watching this going, how could you do that to your own child? And then I go, I know plenty of kids I could do that to. You know, you could do a thing like on Christmas where if you have kids where you give one kid all the great presents and then give the other kid a stick of cinnamon and go, well, you know, luck
of
the draw.
You could do that?
No, I could not do that. That's what I'm saying, is there's options out there. If you want to be mean to your kids, you pick the holiday.
Don't do it on
Christmas.
There's
some kind of option, right? Now you've gone too far. On Halloween, I can see. But Christmas, that's sacred. But I'm watching this going, boy, those parents... They're made of some kind of aluminum alloy, not quite steel, but aluminum alloy, to do this to their kids. Then I'm thinking, I could do this to somebody else's kid. I'd feel bad, but I could never do it to my own.
People do this so they get attention.
But that magnifies it, because then those kids, they're on national TV. Their little crying tantrums are on national TV.
I know. And they, you know, they're too young to ask.
Right.
I mean, now that my kids are teenagers, if I want to talk about something on the air, I honestly ask their, is it cool if I discuss this?
Yeah. Not in these cases.
No.
This is, it's part of the
parents
game.
Parents just exploit their children.
Right. All right. We'll take a little break, and then we'll run you some of the audio. And there's something fascinating that I realized last night during watching this. Because, like I said, I've seen the 7 out of 8 years he's done it. And I figured something out yesterday. We'll discuss this next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
They are sweet children. Why do you break their hearts and steal their candy?
Ah, that's the golden question, Wendy. For those of you just tuning in, we're talking about an event that takes place the night after Halloween every year on Jimmy Kimmel. They do this thing where parents explain to their kids that during the night, after their little adorable angels have gone trick-or-treating, that mom and dad were hungry, and so they ate all of their Halloween candy. Now, we'll play you the audio from some of it, not from all of it. Wendy's already
honestly, it hurts my gut. It hurts my heart. It's like my stomach drops.
Right.
I get it.
And I will confess that last night was the first night that I've seen this that I didn't laugh out loud because I was studying it, trying to figure out the mechanics. Like, what's behind this? I do this every year. Why is this so funny to some and so offensive to others? And to me, it's a little bit of both. But here's a little audio from last night's Jimmy Kimmel. Listen.
Mommy and Daddy got really hungry last night and we ate all your candy.
But
it's all gone.
But
we got really hungry and so Mommy and Daddy ate it all.
No!
I ate all of your Halloween candy last night.
I'm so disappointed at you.
I ate all your sweets when you were in the bath.
Oh, me.
Are you mad? You're not mad I ate all your candy?
I'm not mad at all.
Okay.
I'll never be mad at you because you're my mom.
You're too sweet. It's gross.
Hey!
I hate your mommy!
Did you say you hate your mommy?
Ate all your Halloween candy.
I'm very disappointed in you, Mama.
I'm sorry, I love you.
I love you too, but I'm very disappointed.
All right, so this goes on for a couple more minutes. I know. It's dreadful. The kids have one of three responses, obviously. Number one is kids who explain to their moms and dads that they are very disappointed in them. That happens a couple of times.
And I hope that makes the parent feel unbelievably guilty that their kid took
right,
it so well.
Right, right. That's response number one, the child being disappointed in the adult. And what you see there is absolute mirroring of something that the child has seen 1,000 times in the opposite, where the kid obviously has done something wrong, and the parent says, Wendy, I'm very disappointed in you.
You know, stop saying that. You know how many times I heard that in my life? That just made me have flashbacks.
All right, so that's number one.
I'd rather someone be mad at me than disappointed in
right.
me.
Right.
I'm not kidding.
No, I understand that. I can't tell you how many times with my own parents as a child, I would say, you're mad, aren't you? I can tell you're mad. And if one of my parents would say, mad? No. Disappointed? Yes. Then he's like, oh, I lose. I'm out. I can't win. All right. So disappointed is response number one. Response number two is where the child's mind and body don't know how to react because they so love Halloween and their parents that they can't believe that their mom and dad would do something. So you see them physically like try to figure it out and they can't.
And they're still coming down from the sugar high from
right,
the night before. So
right.
Affects it.
Right. So part of that is them explaining to their parents that they hate them. I hate you.
I'd say that too.
Right. Because you've been betrayed by the people you trust the most. Response number three is the one that I find the most interesting, and that's you see it within a split second as the child processes it and says, I still love you. And you go, wow, what kind of a great parent must you be with the exception of this particular night?
With the exception, yes.
Wait a minute.
Right.
I think this negates all the good parenting prior.
But something has to have been built up in that child for them to, within a second or two, realize.
Right, and now it's all gone.
It's gone, but that kid says, okay, this was traumatic, this was awful, but all I can do is say, for the most part, Mom, Dad, despite what you've just done to me, I still love you. That's amazing.
Someone has texted Jimmy Kimmel, I love it, but my wife hates it. I told her it's a good way to find out if your kid is nice and forgiving or a brat. We have one of each.
But you can't lay it
on the kid.
I don't think you can you?
No, that moment does not indicate what that child is.
No.
I just think that's terrible.
I do, too.
It is.
It physically makes me sick to my stomach listening to it.
And then for the couple of them where the mom, the reaction wasn't good enough, so she's goading the kid on. I ate it all.
Right.
I mean,
And the other one, I still love you, Mommy. Oh, you're too sweet.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to slap her. I would like to find her and slap her.
Later on in the segment, there's a couple parents, because the kid goes, why would you do this to me? And then the parent says, Jimmy Kimmel told us to do it. And the kid goes, Jimmy Kimmel's an idiot.
All right, that's my favorite one.
That's really funny.
But that's really funny. As they go, Jimmy Kimmel is like the biggest hearted one on TV.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I just don't get it.
Oh, yeah.
Because people tune in and talk about it. That's why.
Right.
He gives up his integrity for a funny bit that isn't funny.
Some people give up a Reese's. He gives up his integrity.
But I, on an annual basis, including last night, try to figure out why, because I know it's cruel. And I would, would never do this in a million years. I've pulled pranks on my daughters, but I would never do something like this.
And I wouldn't do it. I said I would do it to my kids.
You wouldn't do it?
I really wouldn't.
You wouldn't do it. But I know it's cruel. I know what you're saying. And Steve, what you're saying is 100% accurate.
But
this is really, really mean. And as I'm listening to the audio, I'm going, boy, if I didn't see this, and I'm just hearing the audio of this, I go, what parent? Those are the worst parents ever. And yet every year, you heard the audience. Those were all responsible adults watching this, laughing at the expense of little kids. Why is that all right?
You said you figured out why, though, did you?
I figured out that's part of comedy, kind of. Times there's a victim. It shouldn't be a 6-year-old kid on Halloween night, but for some reason,
that's a good point.
It tricks your brain just enough. My brain was tricked just enough to go, despite the cruelty of this moment, it's pretty funny.
But you're, again, a former stand-up comic, and you're a funny guy, so you're in it more than we are.
Right.
We're just observers.
Right.
And it's terrible.
But if one of the, if I was watching this last night, and one of the clips was my wife, I didn't know that she did this, doing this to my daughters when they were little, I wouldn't be able to sleep. I would just go, they'll never trust us again, ever.
Well, they will, because thankfully these kids are so little, and it's hopefully they're given the candy back very soon afterwards.
Right.
But you're teaching your kids to do stuff. And someone texted, does this mean that in the future, if a parent tells them bad news, that they're going to think it's a joke?
Right.
Like grandma died, but you know.
Oh, no, I'm kidding. She didn't die.
No, she's in my pumpkin.
Old people do get smaller, Wendy, as they get older. So it's possible. What Steve just said is possible.
And 708 says it's about perspective. You're not telling the kids that their puppy died, which would be cruel. You're saying that Mom and Dad were hungry and ate your candy. I find it funny. The kids seem very spoiled to react the way they do. Thank you, Janice. But these are kids.
Janice.
They're not spoiled. They
don't
expect their candy
right.
that they worked so hard to get.
Not only worked hard to get, but looked forward to that night for 12 months.
All right, here's what should happen. I don't know who is a competitor of Jimmy Kimmel, but somebody should have kids take one of their parents' paychecks and say, I spent it all, you can't pay the mortgage.
Jimmy Fallon or Stephen Colbert does that.
And then just says, only kidding.
No, you know what would be funny is if they did it, they'd set it up by saying, we had a mom who stole, a Jimmy Kimmel fan who stole her kid's candy, so we want to give it to you. And just give like 6-year-olds.
That's great.
Big bags of candy.
That's perfect. I love that.
And finally, to end it all, 619 says, I think it's hilarious, but I don't like children.
Beautiful. All right. We'll take a little break, and then in a little while we'll talk television with Alexander Zeldin from The Decider. That's coming up after the news. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all here on WGN Radio.
And
thanks, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy with you on WGN. We're 312-981-7200 if you have any questions or comments. Alexander Zeldin joins us right now. Alex is the managing editor of Decider.com. Great website. Alex, we haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. I have, before anything else, I need to thank you for something, because on this show 3 weeks ago, you told Wendy and me and all of our listeners about a show that was coming out. It hadn't premiered yet. It was just breaking on Netflix, The Haunting of Hill House. And you talked about how scary it was and how great it was. You nailed it, sir.
Oh, great. I'm so glad you guys liked it. That's one, it's been kind of amazing to watch that really build and pick up steam over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
A lot of Netflix shows fall off after the first weekend. Not that one. It's great. And for anybody listening who hasn't checked it out yet, definitely head and check it out right now.
I have to pile on that thank you, Bill, because really, I have enjoyed it with one of my sons, trying to talk the other one into watching it. It got better each week. It really, truly did. I want more.
Well, I don't know if we're going to see more necessarily, since it is a little bit of a limited series event, but I believe the creator, Mike Flanagan, has some ideas if they do want to move forward with the second season. It may or may not follow the same characters, it may or may not follow the same plot, but it's such a big hit at this point that I imagine Netflix is interested, even if Flanagan isn't.
I always wonder how they figure out a formula. I think you put Stranger Things into that same category, where they're putting out a product, and they kind of make it open-ended, but not really at the end, just in case they get picked up. I almost hope that there isn't a second season, because I liked it being kind of a self-contained story. I don't want them to water it down. You get that? You know what I mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, Mike Flanagan is a horror guy through and through. He has this crew that he works with, that he worked with on Haunting of Hill House as well. My guess, just based on his past catalog, is he will move on to something different with the same actors. But we'll have to see. Again, it seems like it's a big hit and only getting bigger, so their pressure is probably on from Netflix.
Yeah.
And Bill pointed out, which I didn't realize at first, it was the kid from E.T.
Henry Thomas.
And then also Russ Tamblyn, who was in the original Haunting movie from 1963, shows up in this as well.
Yeah, there's also a whole bunch of character actors from Mike Flanagan's other stuff that he's done. A couple of them are on Netflix. I'm blanking on the exact titles at the moment, but I'll try to look them up for you. But go back and watch them, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised if you have already binged through Haunting of Hill House. Oculus, Ouija, Gerald's Game, Hush. Check them all out, because you'll see the same people popping up again and again.
Testament to how good he is when people want to keep working with him over and over. So that's good news. Julia Roberts, a major movie star, one of those people that you go, she doesn't need to do TV. She can do whatever movie she wants to do. But here she is in a TV show, Homecoming. What can you tell us?
So that all hits Prime Video today. It's 10 episodes, I believe. It's a drama, but one of the great things about it is it's actually only half-hour episodes, so it's very easily bingeable. Every episode was directed by Mr. Robot creator Sam Esmail, and it's based on the Gimlet podcast of the same name, also called Homecoming. It is, and I don't say this with any hyperbole, one of the best TV shows of the year. I've watched all of it already. I don't want to tell you too much about it, other than it takes place at a facility called Homecoming that ostensibly seems like it's set up to welcome soldiers back and ease them back into society. And Julia Roberts is the therapist who works there with them. But there's a lot of other stuff going on. It plays out like a Hitchcock thriller. It's so excellently placed. The performances are wonderful. And it's actually even funny at times. Do not miss this show.
Again, it's called Homecoming. So, Alex, what's in it for a star the magnitude of Julia Roberts? There was a time where if you were a Hollywood A-lister, you wouldn't want to do a TV show, but those lines have been crossed, right? That's no longer the way it is.
I think they're gone at this point, honestly. I think TV isn't seen as slumming it for a big actor anymore. Julia Roberts is one of those last standouts that have made the leap to TV. So it still feels like a big deal that she's coming and doing this, particularly because she's going the route of she's wearing a very dowdy-looking wig. She works at a bar at one point in this very rundown bar. So it's not like big, glamorous Julia Roberts movie star. It's more in lines of Erin Brockovich. But you get to explore a character over a longer period of time. A movie is so big, they come in, they point at your face, say, action, and you say, hello, and then they say, cut, and that's it for your day. You know, that's all you're doing. TV, the schedule is faster, so you actually get to do some acting. Plus, over 10 episodes, you really get to delve into and dig into what a character is and what makes them tick. So there's this funny mix, I think, particularly for actors of Julia Roberts' standard or the women on Big Little Lies or something like that, where they can do things quicker, so it feels like you're doing more, but also you get to spend more time on the thing.
It's funny you brought up Big Little Lies, because in their second season, Meryl Streep joins the cast, and again, that's another actress you'd say, Meryl Streep isn't going to do a TV show, but nope, she is going to do a TV show.
Well, at the point that you have, you know, Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon and Shailene Woodley as well in the cast as everybody else is in Big Little Lies, I think Meryl Streep in particular seems to be at the point of the career where she's saying, what sounds fun to me? I'm going to do that. And hanging out with them on a set for a couple of months is probably a lot of fun.
Yep, makes perfect sense. Alexander Zalbin is our guest. He's the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website if you like show business, entertainment, television. We'll take a quick break and then continue this discussion next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Oh, I cannot wait.
We're talking television with Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. Big night Sunday for Walking Dead fans. What can you tell us without giving too much away, Alexander?
Sure. First of all, I love the music coming in. That's very exciting. second of all, so this is Andrew Lincoln's last episode on the show is this Sunday. This is a big deal. He's been the anchor of the show, both in front of the camera and behind the scenes for over 8, going into 9 seasons now. He's one of the highest paid actors on TV. It, you know, has fallen off in the ratings a bit, but it's still one of the biggest shows on TV. So him leaving leaves a huge hole in the show going forward. Nobody is quite sure exactly what is going to happen to The Walking Dead or what it's going to be like or how Andrew Lincoln is going to exit. Certainly those who watched last week know there was a bit of a cliffhanger in terms of Rick Grimes' fate. So certainly we'll be picking up with that.
He cannot go that way. Wendy says that's no way for a man to die. Not Rick.
Yeah, can we talk about what happened at the end of the last episode, or do you not want to spoil it?
Can we give a little, if you don't want to know, maybe come back in several minutes?
Yeah, let's say that. If you don't want to know what happened at the end of last week, come back in a minute and a half.
After spending the entire episode in a literal hole with Daryl Dixon, he crawled out and was riding on a horse, leading a herd towards a bridge that he was hoping would break and get rid of the zombie herd. When the horse encountered another herd, the horse freaked out, threw Rick onto some concrete. He landed on some rebar and impaled himself. We left the episode with Rick Grimes completely alone, two enormous herds of zombies approaching him.
One from each direction.
What?
One from each direction. Yep. So it's epic. I get
it. So I will agree with you. I think I don't want to see Rick go out like that. I want to see him go out
as a hero.
As the most heroic way you possibly can. And the thing that I will say that I know about the show, even at the end of the last episode watching it, I felt like we've seen this happen on this show before, where somebody's completely surrounded by zombies and then something happens and they get out of it.
Yeah.
This seems way worse than anything that's happened before, but he's Rick Grimes, and I feel pretty confident that he's going to figure out some way out of this thing, though, as we know, since this is the last episode, he probably won't see his way out of it for very long.
I have a theory, and it's not going to work, although you never know. I felt he should die at the hands of Negan. Like, perhaps Michonne is trying to give Negan some food or something, and Negan gets loose and kills Rick. That, to me, would be the way to go.
I think that would be interesting, but just to continue the speculation, my concern about something like that is I feel like that would alienate a lot of the fan base. Certainly, that would be appropriate in terms of the level of thing that kills him.
Yeah.
But you would then have Negan triumphant and Rick losing, and that would be a huge bummer.
Wow.
That would be a sad way to go. So, I don't know. We'll see Sunday. We'll also see how many people tune in. I think that'll be another interesting thing to check out because they have been hyping this so much.
Can I tell you my pick, Alexander Frau? I think he should have died.
Yeah.
Jet ski accident.
Literally jumping over a shark?
Yeah, jumping over a shark, a symbolic shark.
All right, that would be awesome.
That would be funny. So this, with the departure of him and his character, this leaves just two cast members, right, who were there from day one.
No, there are more.
No, two,
You've
I
got Daryl.
And Carol. And that's it.
And Maggie.
She came in season two, at the end of season two.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah. She was when they went to the farmhouse. Remember the farm?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So just two, right?
And she's actually going to be leaving.
Yeah.
She's going to be leaving pretty soon.
She's getting too mean. She needs to leave.
Wendy says she's too mean.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So big night Sunday for Walking Dead fans, the final episode of Rick Grimes. In retrospect, I know we don't have a whole lot of time to cover this, but do you think they would have preferred that people not know? I mean, everybody knows it's his last episode, but wouldn't it be more indelible, more of a shock to the viewer to just kill him out of nowhere?
Yep.
Yes, I think so. But I think at the same time, as usual with the show, they'll have a couple of surprises in store. So we'll have to see how everything pans out.
All right. All right. House of Cards, something of a shift after the departure of Kevin Spacey. What can you tell us there?
So, yeah, that all dropped on Netflix today. That is the final season of the show. Our reviewer, Megan O'Keefe, loved it because of how insane it was. She's watched most of the season already. Greg Kinnear and Diane Lane are filling the void left by Kevin Spacey. And a lot of the season seems to be, at least early going, the mystery of what happened to his character and what Claire Underwood, his wife, did to him. So stay tuned as it all wraps up. It should be tricky and weird and crazy over the top.
Alex, is she now the president on the show? Is his wife the president?
She is now. Yeah, she is. Robin Wright is now the president of the United States.
So how, I'm trying to figure out how that would work because just on the show. So if you're the president and something happens to you, your wife just doesn't get the office. The vice president gets the office. But she wasn't vice president, was she?
I'll be honest with you. I tuned out of House of Cards after the first half of the first episode.
Oh. Oh, right.
I've never watched it.
But I assume it's never happened in history, so I assume it has to be accurate. It's
yeah,
basically
it must be.
A documentary.
All right. Fair enough. Game of Thrones has one final season, but there's going to be is it a prequel or a sequel to it?
Well, there is going to be a prequel. Yeah, it's called The Long Night. We don't know when it's going to be on. George R. R. Martin kind of leaked accidentally that title the other day. Naomi Watts is going to star in it.
Wow.
We don't know a lot about it other than it takes place thousands of years before Game of Thrones and supposedly reveals the dark secrets of the history of Westeros that we don't know.
Oh, all right. And when does that start up?
We don't know at this point. The prequel has just started casting. They're going to film it pretty soon. But HBO likes to be very careful with these things. Not a lot of people know this, but Game of Thrones actually shot an entire pilot with a mostly different cast for Game of Thrones and then completely scrapped it and went had a second go at it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they're hoping not to do that with this Game of Thrones prequel, but they're being very, very careful with it.
Speaking of Game of Thrones, one of the stars of Game of Thrones, Peter Dinklage, has a movie on HBO where he plays Hervé Valachez. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but one of our reviewers, Leah Palmieri, saw it, and she thought it was charming and fun. And even more than Peter Dinklage, he co-stars with Jamie Dornan, who starred in the 50 Shades movies.
Yeah.
And she liked him a lot in it. She felt like he certainly makes... It makes like more of a case for his career going forward out of those movies.
Jamie Dornan, right?
Yeah.
He was good in it. I watched it the other day. I was very disappointed in it. When I first heard about this, I went, boy, this is going to be gold. Peter Dinklage is playing Hervé Valachez. How can this not be great? I was not that impressed by it. It didn't do much for me.
Yeah, it seemed like a small movie all told, which is not necessarily what you expect from these HBO original movies. They're usually big, bolder things like Al Pacino taking on Paterno or things like that.
Yeah.
But this one seemed all right.
That was it. That's what it was. That's exactly what it was. It was all right. It was just okay. And I just have to ask your opinion. I watched Will and Grace yesterday, a really interesting episode where Grace's character confesses to her dad that as a child she had been molested by a family friend. For a comedy to pull out something that serious isn't always the easiest thing to do, but boy, were they good at it. Did you get to see that episode?
I have not, but I know that's something that Will and Grace actually does really well, and Deborah Messing in particular is very politically active and involved, so I'm not surprised that they went there with the episode. It's also just something that I think is part and parcel with the show. It does deliver nonstop laughs, but it's always baked into the DNA of it that they're going to be taking on issues and trying to push the envelope as much as possible.
So hard to pull off both at the same time, but if you want to see an example of somebody who did it, they pulled it off. It was it was so moving and touching and upsetting, and yet there were moments of really it being very funny, like Will and Grace does. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed. Great show. Alex, thank you so much, as always. Really appreciate it. We'll all be watching Walking Dead this Sunday, anxious to see how it turns out. And
it better be good.
It better be. Wendy, it's throwing
That's
it down.
That's all I'm saying.
It better be good. It'll be good. Alex, we'll talk to you in a week. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor of Decider.com. We'll take a little break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Judy.
Good job.
Whatever.
well played.
I found this article. This is great. McCall's Magazine, back in 1958.
I remember that.
Put at McCall's Magazine?
Yeah. That and Good Housekeeping was always
Those
at
were
the
standards.
Doctor's office.
Yes. And some Reader's Digest.
Yep.
From,
and Highlights Magazine.
Highlights, of course. Boy, I miss Goofus and Gallant.
You were Goofus.
What were? I are Goofus. all right, so McCall's back in 1958 put out a magazine with this title, How to Get a Husband, 129 Ways for Women of the Day of 1958 to Get a Husband. I think, Wendy, I'll read them to you. I think most of these hold up really well today. I'm pretty sure they do. Here's a good tip. Be friendly to ugly men, because handsome is as handsome does.
It says ugly?
Yeah. Be friendly to ugly men. That's solid
horrible.
Advice, right? Get a government job overseas. Well, that's solid. There's a lot of fellas overseas. Why wouldn't you do something like that? Volunteer for jury duty. Okay. Could do that.
That's how you're going to meet a husband?
Yeah, you'll meet the guy of your dreams on a jury.
Listen, you know how badly I want to do jury duty.
Right.
I already have a husband. I'm not trying to find another one.
No, I know. But it's good to have a plan B.
My gosh,
Maybe
these
just
are
find
stupid.
A guy. Tell your friends that you are interested in getting married. Don't keep it a secret. Solid advice. Wendy, I bet you've done this at some point, probably before you were married, but this, you're going to find a guy this way easily. Get lost at a football game.
Excuse me, sir. Can you help me find my seat?
Where's the end zone? Don't take a job in a company run largely by women. Now, this was 1957. I don't think there were too many companies run by women in 1957.
Good point.
This is great advice. I hope that women found husbands based on this. Get a job demonstrating fishing tackle at a sporting goods store.
That is a great idea. I'm not even kidding.
That's
or maybe
great.
Get a job at Home Depot or something.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that
can translate
miss.
To times now.
You'll
I think
meet
that's...
guys that way easily.
Hey, is Bass Pro Shops hiring?
See if Bass Pro Shop will take your resume. On a plane, train, or bus, do not sit next to a woman. Always sit next to a man. Oh, that's good.
No.
That is good. Go to all reunions of your high school or college class. There may be widowers there.
That's terrible.
That's not good. Don't be afraid to associate with more attractive girls. They may have some leftovers.
This is horrible.
Every one of these is awful. There's not one that I go, all right, well, that one's okay. They're all awful. Go back to your hometown for a visit. That wild kid next door may have become somebody very intelligent.
Or he remained wild right. And you're still attracted to him.
My guess is probably more times than not, that's the correct answer on that one. When traveling, Stay at a small hotel where it is easier to meet strangers.
And to get chopped up.
I think anyone who saw Psycho will tell you that that's always money in the bank. You can't go wrong in a small motel. Out of the way is the best. Learn to paint. Set up an easel outside of an engineering school.
Oh, my God.
That one, if I didn't know this took place in 1957 and somebody told me that one, I'd go, well, that's from 1957, isn't it? It has to be.
That's comical.
Set up an easel outside of an engineering school. A woman, she couldn't attend an engineering school, of course. That'd be ridiculous. But you could set up a paint easel outside of one.
That's so funny.
Now, these are some ways to let him know that you are there, Wendy. So say you're in a situation, there's a guy nearby, and you want to somehow let that guy know that you're there and could be a good matchup. Here are some things you might want to try doing. Stumble when you walk into a room that he's in. Why?
Well, so maybe he'll like reach out
assume
to help
you're drunk?
You. Well, that could get you a date easier.
Maybe it would.
Maybe well, so what? He'll reach out to help
to catch you.
But, you know, knowing my luck,
yes,
I'd have to get up myself and say live from New York at Saturday night.
Right.
That is so ridiculous.
Yep. Yep. Here's one that shows how equal men and women were in 1957, Wendy. Forget discretion every once in a while and call him up. So back then they had phones that women could call guys on? I didn't know that. That's news
to
me.
The princess phones.
Yeah, the princess phones. Carry a hat box. Really?
I want to know more.
Has there ever been a man and woman meet and fall in love because the woman was carrying a hat box? Has that ever happened?
You know what I think would work better? Carry a bowling ball in a bag.
Right.
Because maybe that would be like, hey, do you bowl?
I'm a bowler. You're a bowler.
A hat box?
I don't understand.
What guy is going to say anything?
I don't know.
Hey, do you have a hat in your hat box?
Wink, wink.
My goodness.
This one I can kind of see. Wear a Band-Aid because people will always ask you what happened. What a great conversation starter. Put a Band-Aid on your wrist. That's going to work. This seems obvious, Wendy, but maybe it wasn't in 1957. This is, again, if you're a woman and you want a man to notice you, to know that you're there, here's some solid advice from McCall's from 1957. Make a lot of money.
It was impossible for a woman to do that.
In 1957? You couldn't.
No.
There was no option to do that. Learn several funny stories and learn to tell them well, but make sure that you don't tell them to him more than one time.
Okay, that's not right either, because remember, women were not really supposed to be funny.
Right, because men felt threatened by that.
To a small extent, it's still like that today, but definitely in the 50s.
This
is McCall's Magazine. You should get a refund on your subscription, ladies.
I want my 80 cents back. That's what it cost for a year's worth of subscription to McCall's in 1957. I hope you tried this one at some point, Wendy. Walk up to him and tell him that you need some advice.
Just a complete stranger that I find attractive?
Yes. Excuse me, handsome sir, but I have a Band-Aid on my hand, and I need some advice on how to get it off.
And it's giving me trouble holding my hat box.
I can hardly hold it.
And quite honestly, you're ugly, but I need to be nice to you as well.
Right. It said so in McCall's Magazine. They will not send me my 80 cents back, so I'm honoring their every word. Here's a good one. Drop your handkerchief. It still works.
No, it does not.
Try that today. Just walk to a place
where I have a Kleenex.
That's the problem with this, is that good luck finding a girl with a handkerchief. But would that possibly work if you just walked up past some men and dropped your handkerchief?
If you did it in such a way that they did in the 50s, where you batted your eyelashes and then very dramatically went, oops.
Yeah, that'll work. Have your father buy some theater tickets that have to be gotten rid of. What does that mean?
That means you can say to a cute guy, you know what? My father bought these tickets and he can't use them, so I have two tickets to see Hamilton. Care to go?
It wouldn't have been Hamilton in 1957.
It
would have been Your American Cousin. I'm supposed to go to the Ford Theater. It's President's Day. Don't let him fish for your name the next time you meet. None of this guess who stuff works. What does that mean?
I don't understand that.
I'm not sure I understand that one.
Read that again.
Don't let him fish for your name the next time you meet. the Guess Who stuff doesn't work.
Oh, so just come right out and just go, hi, I'm Wendy, remember me?
Oh. Yeah, be more assertive.
Yes.
And a man will certainly not be threatened by that in 1957.
Yeah, that's right. All of these are not appropriate for 1957.
None of them. Not a single one. All right, we'll take a little break. We'll come back with more of this. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200, Spillin' Wendy on WGN.
Is this Danny and the Juniors?
Yes, it is. They're at the Hop, Wendy.
I've been to the Hop with an ugly man.
No, that's not going to work.
But I appreciated him.
Well, that is going to work then.
Because beauty is only skin deep. Is that what it was?
Beauty is skin deep, but ugly runs all the way through. So true.
It's not what they 1958,
said. 1958, McCall's Magazine put out an article, very helpful article, in which they instructed women how to get a husband. They had 129 ways, 129 little tips for you, a woman of 1958, to not only find the man of your dreams, but to keep the man of your dreams.
Was McCall's the Cosmo of its time?
I think it was. I do think it was, yeah. That was the cutting edge.
Yeah, I think you're
right. If you're a woman wanting to be a modern woman, that would be your magazine, McCall's.
Who was McCall?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know. Here's a good one. And this holds up today. Learn how to bake a tasty apple pie. Bring one into your office and then let the eligible bachelors taste it.
Okay, but again, well, I guess you could be a secretary in the office.
That was pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay, because I mean,
that was it.
Many women were not in the workforce yet.
Right. Buy a convertible because men like to ride in them.
Where are you going to get the money to buy the convertible if you can't get a good paying job?
Right. If you're at a resort, have the bellboy page you.
Why are you going to be at a resort by yourself?
I don't know. It doesn't go into great detail in a lot of these. Laugh at his jokes. They already hinted at that one. If there's a wallflower among the men that you know, why not cultivate him? For all you know, he may be a diamond in the rough, and that's in parentheses. He wouldn't actually be a diamond in the rough. They're just saying he'd be like a diamond in the rough.
McCall's was a monthly American women's magazine published by the McCall Corporation. A great popularity through much of the 20th century. Bill, it peaked at a readership of 8.4 million.
That's a ton of people.
In the 1960s.
That's a ton of people.
A ton.
Yeah.
No competition, evidently.
I don't think so. This is one, Wendy. No.
They had Look magazine.
But look,
look in life. No?
Yeah, but aren't this was for women.
Look
in
life were more for a little bit of everybody. McCall's was the women's magazine of the '50s and into the '60s.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. This one, Wendy, would work both in 1958 and I think today. If you're a woman and you're looking for a guy, you got to try this one.
All right.
Accidentally have your purse fly open, scattering its contents all over the street.
Okay, you know, you've seen my purse.
Yeah.
It would take 18 men
to gather all that stuff. If you did that in 1958, it would almost be done today.
I have a great idea, and I'm surprised this isn't there.
Yeah?
Why don't you have an opened chocolate bar while a guy is walking by with an open peanut butter jar?
Oh, and bump
into
him.
And then accidentally trip.
That would absolutely work. How could that not work? This is good, and it's accurate. Men like to think that they are authorities on perfume. Boy, is that true. Ask his advice on the kind that you should wear.
Can I tell you something about that? And this is going to sound terrible.
Yeah.
It's pretty great if my husband likes the perfume I wear.
Yeah.
But I'm getting the perfume that I want to wear because I like the way it smells.
Of course it is. But you couldn't do that in 1958. Legally, you could only get the kind of perfume that the man of your life would like. That's it. No, there's no options. Get better looking glasses. Men still make passes at girls who wear glasses or try contact lenses. It says it. Get better looking glasses. .. Men still make passes at girls who wear glasses or try contact lenses. It says. Practice your drinking.
I didn't have to practice.
No, I know it. Not you. This is a woman from 1958. Practice your drinking with your women friends first. Don't be having drinks with guys until you've perfected it.
I think they mean till you see how you're going to react.
What your levels are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still doing that test.
If you dye your hair, Wendy, pick a shade and stick to it.
Oh, no.
You want to experiment a little, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah? wear high heels most of the time because, and it says here, they're sexier.
Was this written by a man or a woman? I'm just curious. For McCall's.
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
It could be written by a woman. It could have.
It could be an ill-informed woman, right?
Or a vixen.
Maybe. Maybe. Oh, you should always do this for a guy. Tell him he's handsome.
Well, you should do that now.
Yeah. Yep. Take good care of your health. Men don't like girls who are ill.
This is crazy.
Is that true?
Well,
I didn't know that was true.
That's a nice way of saying keep yourself in shape, but I like it better that way.
Men are drawn toward healthier women as opposed to your sickly women. I didn't know that. That's solid news.
Again, if you've just joined us, these are from McCall's Magazine.
Yeah.
And they're ways to catch a husband.
Yeah, ways to get a husband. Oh, is this one good? You can't even debate this one. If you look good in a sweater, wear one every third date.
Sweaters were very popular for the girls back then.
Yeah? Every third date. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to underdo it. Pace yourself about every third date. How about this one? Dress differently from the other girls who work in your office. What does that mean? How differently? She always comes to work dressed like a leopard. What's going on with her?
I would get noticed.
I get nervous around her. I don't understand this one at all, but I swear to you it's true. Get a sunburn.
Why? Well, everyone looks better with a little color on their face.
A little color, but a sunburn? Would you mind rubbing some solarcane on me, sir, of 1958?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Is that why?
Although you could just put blush on.
Yeah.
Did they have fake bronzers then?
I don't know if they did in the late 50s.
I don't know. When did QT come out? QT tans in 3 to 4 hours with or without sun.
60s, I think, right?
Yeah, probably.
That's from the 60s. Boy, this one gets right to the point. This one does not mess around. Go on a diet if you need to.
Fatty.
Right. It should have said that. Hey, Chubsy Ubsy, we're trying to help you get a husband. Would you just listen for a minute, for 1 minute? When you're with him, order your steak rare.
First of all, back in the 50s, you'd probably order a salad.
Right.
You know, that first date where you always want to say, I barely eat.
Right. I'll just have a bean. That's all. I couldn't possibly eat more than a bean.
A bean.
I'll end on this one. There's so many good ones, but I'll end on this one. Do not tell him about your allergies.
Because men don't like an ill woman.
Right. We learned that earlier. Our women healthy. 1958.
God.
And it must have worked. I don't know.
QT came out in 1963, by the way.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
It's been that long.
And was Band du Soleil the other one that was popular in the 60s and the 70s?
That was Band du Soleil for the Saint-Tropez
tan.
That was just tanning lotion. It wasn't self-tanning.
Oh, it wasn't.
QT was the one, and of course you know what QT stood for.
Cutie.
No, no, quick tanning.
Oh, I thought it was. I thought they were calling you a cutie.
You're so 1950s.
I guess I am. All right,
you're a cutie too, but you're ill.
Yeah, there's always a downside. All right, Wendy and I must go to the stream, and we would love for you to come along with us. It's always fun on the stream. It's the bonus hour, so come with us or stick around here and listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Coming up, the stories that matter with Domati Pongo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.